Moncrief on News Talk.
There were plans to construct, or there are plans to construct, a viewing area close to Dublin Airport where fans of that sort of thing could watch planes taking off and landing. And as seems almost inevitable in this country, objections have been lodged to the planning permission. So what is the process of lodging objections, and can anyone object to anything? Joe Corr is Managing Director of Planning with CWPA and Swords and a former President of the Irish Planning Institute. Afternoon, Joe.
Afternoon, Sean. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too. Now, we probably should avoid commenting too much on this specific case because it's still in play at the moment, kind of thing.
It is. It's a live application, Sean. So I wouldn't comment on that application at the moment. And just to say, I'm here in a private capacity. I'm not representing the IPI either, just to say that to you.
Okay. All right. So we put all our shields up there. So we're
put everything up. Yeah.
We'll get slagged off for some reason anyway.
So to
lodge an objection to something, what is that process, generally speaking?
Well, the process is that when somebody puts in a planning application, which is a whole different story altogether. But when somebody puts in an application, members of the public are entitled to put a submission on that planning file. Now, it's not just an ad hoc process put in whenever you want. You must have it lodged within a 5-week period from the registration of the planning application. So from the date that the planning authority council, city or county councils, from the date that they get the file in and stamp it, then that clock starts ticking, and within 5 weeks you must put your submission in.
Yeah,
a lot of people call them objections, but they're submissions, really.
Yeah. All right, okay, and so for the person who is making this application for planning permission, are there forums in which they're supposed to advertise that they've just done this?
No, well, the applicant has to. There's a statutory process in place for that. A site notice must go up on the subject site where the application relates to. It must be an advertisement in the newspaper, one of the newspapers circulating in the area. It must be on a list of approved newspapers and publications. You'll find that on your council website. Then when the submission goes in within that 5-week period, that goes on the file, and members of the public can see that. So not just yourself, members of the public. And now we have e-planning. A lot of councils have their files online, so you can have a look online as well. So you don't need to be, for example, here in Swords, we have County Hall for Fingal County Council. You don't have to be living in Swords to be able to stroll in and have a look at a file physically. You can be in Wexford or Mayo and still look at the files on the websites of the council.
Okay, how much does it cost to lodge a submission?
The submission is about €20. So for members of the public to put something in, it's €20. So often you might see, kind of residents associations might come together. They might put in one submission and there might be five or six of them are signing it. Others would say, gosh, no, we put in individual submissions. So there's 10 submissions going in, not just one. So that's £20 a pop. For each of those.
Yeah. And does that actually make any difference, Joe, if there's one submission perhaps signed by many people as opposed to, 20 submissions? Do the planning authorities go, whoa, there's something controversial here?
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. It's a good point, because does it make any difference if it's a round robin kind of submission that goes in that every one of them are identical, but they just want to put in individual numbers to demonstrate that there's a lot of people? It could be argued that the same effect is, if they get one. So, for example, take the example of the residence group again. There's no real need to be putting in individual submissions. The planner, the case officer who's assessing that planning file must have regard to what they call people who put objections in or submissions in are third party submissions. So the planner must have regard for all the third party submissions that go in on that file anyway, and they will be assessed by the planner and considered in the planner's recommendation.
And can anyone, if you can view it all online, this just came in as a question from a listener. Does that mean someone in Mayo could object to something in Cork if anyone can view the files?
Yeah, it does. It's any member of the public at that part of the planning process or planning stage. Anyone can do that.
Yeah.
So it might be. So, for example, what, you know, the reason for that is there might be an environmental issue. So somebody, you know, in Castlebar might say, gosh, you know, they're doing something over there in Leitrim. And I'm not really happy that they've covered everything in their planning application in regard to environmental issues. So I'm going to put a submission in on that.
Yeah.
To highlight that.
OK, fair enough. And so when you're putting in your submission, is there, if you like, a list presented to you of the grounds on which you can object to something? Or can you make up the grounds yourself?
Well, listen, you know, something that you might have an issue with, I may not. So I might put a submission in and cover maybe three items. But you might say, well, yeah, that's grand that Joe was doing that, but I have another thing, so I'm going to put something else in. It's whatever concerns you. So what I would say to you is, though, it must be based on planning grounds. You can't just do something because you don't like me. Mm. So if I'm a Shamrock Rovers fan and Bowes are building a new stadium, I can't object because I don't like Bowes, you know.
Yeah.
There has to be planning criteria there. So it must be planning-based, not based on just your personal dislike for somebody.
But say grounds like doesn't fit in with the architecture of the area, those kind of things, that can be a bit vague, can it? Or subjective even.
Well, you see, remember this, that, you know, people who are putting in submissions aren't qualified planners or anything like that. So they're saying what they're doing is they're putting in a submission or an objection to a development, proposed development, you know, based on what they believe is wrong with it. You know, it's then down to the planner who's assessing all of these third party submissions to say, well, I think Sean Moncrief has a really good, you know, good point on this. So I'm actually going to do something about this now. I'm going to put that into my you know, recommendation, or I'm going to ask for additional information on that file because Sean Moncrief has raised that point with me and I need that clarified by the applicant, you know?
Mm. If say, somebody puts in a submission and says there's an application for some building and, you know, perhaps it needs more car parking spaces or it needs a toilet, and if the planning authorities agree with that, do you start the process all over again or can you amend it?
Well, no, there is, you have to get, as an observer, you have to get your submission or your objection in within the allotted 5-week period to allow things be assessed, right? So then after 8 weeks, a decision is made on the file, and that decision can be to refuse it, to grant it with conditions, or to seek additional information. So, for example, If I was doing something, you know, in terms of car parking, we have guidelines for car parking now, bicycle parking and stuff like that. There are guidelines for that. You don't generally now look at increasing car parking, you know, in places where, you know, you're relying on the private car for transport. Now, that would be the last port of call, really. You'd be looking for more sustainable modes of transport, such as cycling or getting the train or getting the bus to wherever you're going. So, you know, in terms of that, the car is the last kind of mode. So you don't want to encourage lots of people to come there. So just about a week ago, I went to Jeremy Clarkson's farm in Oxfordshire, just to have a look at, I was in the area, so I went down to have a look at that. And he put in a car park. If anyone watches the show, he put in a car park. But it is a destination because it's in a rural area. So he needs some parking there. You know, there probably aren't any buses going by or anything like that. Mm. But they didn't do a traffic impact assessment, I'm sure, because when you're there, the car park is full. It's only about 80 cars with a bit of an overflow. And then when you're leaving, there's probably a two kilometer tailback, you know. So I can understand why local people weren't, you know, enamored to Jeremy's proposal there. So you don't do even in football pitches now that are being provided in communities. They don't want big car parks with those. We know people that away teams and all that will travel, but you want them to come by bus. You don't want them to come by private car. So the be and end all is not car parking. You know, if anything, a local authority or a planning authority will look at reducing car parking on any proposed development.
Okay. A listener wonders, why are councils not subject to the same notification criteria as individuals?
Not sure. Notification as individuals.
Yeah, so I didn't quite understand that question myself. I was hoping maybe you would.
Yeah, no, I don't know notification. Councils notified of what? I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay, that was a little vague. If that person could text in again, maybe I'd be a bit clearer. What you mean. Now, if after the 5 years, someone's put in a submission and if the planning authority has said, no, it's going ahead, can they appeal it then?
They can, yeah. So they can appeal it to Mbord Pleanála. And that's, so a full planning application will get a final grant after 12 weeks. So 8 weeks is where a decision is taken to either, you know, decide to grant or decide to refuse, a decision to refuse or whatever. So the 4 weeks between the 8 week period and the 12 weeks is to allow for third party or first party appeals to go to the board. So first party, I mean, is the applicant. They're the first party. Third party is the member of the public who's put a submission in. Now, it's not always just restricted to someone who's made a submission. There are other. So for example, if there's a prescribed body, so we have lots of prescribed bodies that have to be notified of development whenever something substantial is happening. So for example, Antashka. So if Antashka if they weren't contacted by the council for their view on it, they could take an appeal because they weren't contacted. So they don't need to have put a submission in on it. Similarly, a landowner who may be in an adjoining site and has an interest in the land adjacent to that, they may seek leave to appeal as well. So it's not just the third parties that can appeal.
Right. Okay. And so the entire process, including an appeal, then are you looking at months? Can it run on longer than that?
Yeah, it can. I mean, so when you take an appeal, you know, the desired kind of outcome for that is 18 weeks. Now, what can happen with Mbord Pleanála is that they may be inundated with appeals or whatever they're doing, strategic infrastructure development. But so resources might be a problem. So they would notify you that they won't decide that by, you know, the 10th of July. It'll be the 10th of September when they do it, you know. And look, that's just the way it is. Similarly, councils can do that as well. If they don't feel that they're going to have enough time to decide your application after the 8 week period, well, then they would write to you and say, look, we request an extension on this. And generally you'd agree, you know, to that extension. So, yeah, it can be extended.
Yeah. So is that, say, for instance, for Metro and the Metro and the Lewis, etc., that these things seem to get held up for years. Is that just because of the sheer number of submissions on them?
Well, that's a different process. I'll just quickly explain that to you. Mm. So when you put an application through the council, that's facilitated under Section 34 of the Planning and Development Act. I won't get boring on this, don't worry. The Lewis type stuff or Metro and things like that, that's a different process. That's under the Strategic Infrastructure Development, which is different legislation. But yeah, so for Metro, we saw recently that there was an oral hearing. So that gives people with an interest the opportunity to make an oral submission as well to that planning proposal, that development proposal. Now, the other thing that can hold up development, general development, is you take it, you put in an observation to the council. Your observation, you're not happy with the outcome. They give the permission, right? So you're not happy, you wanted it refused. You appeal that then to Mbord Pleanála, and Mbord Pleanála agree and uphold the council's decision. Well, then, if you identify anything in the process, anything in the planning process that was undertaken, you could seek leave for a judicial review. It's not an appeal, it's a judicial review, and it's a review of the process that was involved in assessing that proposal. So that can hold things up for a good while. It could hold it up for a couple of years.
Yeah. In your experience, Joe, I mean, there is a general perception that our planning process has too much red tape and it's unwieldy and it doesn't move quickly enough. Is that your sense?
I mean, a lot of people from abroad would think that we are very much focused on the public consultation end of things, that we give too much public consultation. Now, lots of people are shouting at the radios now saying, that's not true. You know, we don't get enough public consultation. So, look, we have a planning system here that is quite cumbersome, and it has become quite cumbersome over the years. Some would argue that every time politicians get involved in trying to resolve an issue through bringing in new planning legislation, it always makes it more complicated. There's probably some merit in that as well, but I think we have a process. It's what we have to work within. And I mean, I would encourage all members of the community, individuals or groups, you know, look at your development plans to see what's happening in your area. More often than not, what you do find is, you know, in a housing scheme, you know, there's this area of that housing estate that's always had grass on it for the last 5 years. Next of all, a planning application goes in for more housing. And people are saying, well, you know, we can't play football on that anymore. What's the story? The story is that it has been zoned, but it was just left there, you know, whilst they were doing other things or whilst they were preparing a planning application. So what you really need to do is look at your development plan. It's all colour-coded. Look at your own area. See what zonings are in your area and inform yourself so that you know what's coming down the line in the future. You can expect that sites are going to be developed out.
Yeah. Also, there's a perception that there's at least a cohort of people who object to things so that they can get a bit of cash from developers. In your experience, Joe, does that happen?
I'm reading quite recently a lot of that is a concern. That's a worry, because that really does make a mockery of the planning system. You know, I mean, look, it's you know, I don't want to comment too much on it, but I just want to say that, you know, it really isn't the right way to go about things. You know, and look, I know there are a few cases and that in the courts as well over it, and hopefully the right decisions will come about. I mean, it's a ridiculous, it's almost like blackmail, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Joe, thanks a million for speaking with us today. Hugely informative as ever. Joe Corr is Managing Director for Planning with CWPA and Swords, and a former Irish Planning Institute president. Right, a lot of commentary on that, along with and I don't think I'm going to read out many of the my neighbour did this texts, because, you know, defamation, etc. If the same person keeps objecting to every building, can they ban or fine them to stop them objecting in future? Well, I would imagine not, given that's as long as they've got some sort of legitimate planning reason to put in an objection, then everyone's entitled to do that, whether they never do it or whether they do it all the time. Government should be allowed to grant planning permission for big projects that are important to the state. People shouldn't be allowed to object to projects like bus, hospitals, etc. As you were saying, as Joe was saying there, in other jurisdictions, those kind of development projects do have that kind of weight behind them. Not so much here. We're very conscious about, you know, transparency and nothing be seen to be dodgy. But then it can all get very frustrating for everybody. My group lodged a planning objection. My residence group lodged a planning objection for a proposed bus stop outside our estate. It was signed the residents. But I wasn't in favour of the objection. It made me furious. Another text says you should have to stand over an objection. Too many people are allowed to object to new projects and hold up the whole process and face no consequences for it. Well, because it's not a crime. And, you know, that goes to kind of, you know, what are their motives for doing it? And their motives could be completely genuine for objecting to something. I lodged submissions on all developments on greenfield sites near me, says his texter. There's a lot of derelict sites that could be developed before greenfields are destroyed. Fix the dereliction. The country is turning into a kip. Somebody else wonders, if a person dies after making a submission but planning has been approved, is the submission still considered? That's an interesting question. I don't know. I imagine they would still consider it, because it's If it's on a planning basis, then that still stands. It doesn't really matter if the initial objector isn't with us anymore. In our area, planning permission has been granted by the local authority to a new multi-storey car park. Lots of planning objections were submitted. However, it was given the green light. However, those objectors have launched an appeal to the approval. It's a never-ending journey for those people. Well, as you heard there, yes, it can go on for quite some time. Someone else says the biggest objectors to housing developments in Dublin over the last 5 years have been politicians. Well, it seems to be the case that, at least in some cases, that has been the case. Now, are they putting in the lion's share of objections or not? I don't know. We need those figures to hand. I'm all for the objection process, but we need to speed it up, says this person. It should be done online. Well, as you heard, it can be done online, where if you object to something, you can make amendments and not have to start the whole process again. The red tape around planning is crazy. Well, again, as you heard, they don't have to start all over again. They can amend the original permission. Objections should be done in a court with the person objection should have it out with the developers or the government. Well, I mean, you're like an ordinary person living in a, you know, three-bedroomed house and then you have to go into a court against a multi-million euro developer who's like a squad of barristers in there. That doesn't sound very fair. Very hard to build something nowadays because the environmental rules change so regularly. There will always be objections or more hoops to jump through in order to get it done. And someone else says, the CPO of land for development by the state is common practice across Europe. In Brussels, for instance, land is compulsorily purchased, then zoned. This eliminates land hoarding by investors, and there are no multimillionaire farmers. I don't think there's that many in this country either. There's also less risk of corruption for councillors wanting to zone land. This could save 100 grand a house. I assume we knock 100 grand a house off the prices of houses in places like Dublin. Yeah, you never know. That might be the answer, all right?
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.